Chapter 10 Signs in the Heavens. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, Jesus. 1866. Saint John had foreseen the portrayal of the womanhood of the spiritual idea when he recorded, quote, "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, and the moon under her feet." End quote. The great wonder in heaven had appeared in the 1850s when Mary Patterson vowed a vow to God to devote her future years to helping sick and suffering humanity. And she was truly clothed with the sun. The sun symbolizing that her life was governed by soul, by truth, life, and love. Phineas P. Quimby was the first since her saintly mother to sense Mrs. Patterson's spirituality. Little wonder that it took sharp experiences before Mary learned that animal magnetism was the essence of his practice. Though Quimby's work was from a wrong basis, like John the Baptist, he recognized the Christ idea when it came into his experience. He perceived the higher, spiritual, feminine thought and acknowledged it stammeringly when he said, quote, "Put this science into the life or soul of the female, and then she is safe from the animal life, and it puts her in possession of a science that the natural man knows nothing of. It separates her from matter. Like a chemist, she then stands among all kinds of matter which are under her control." End quote. That is where Mrs. Patterson stood in February of 1866. On a mountaintop, with all matter under her control. She had yet to learn how she had gotten there, how to stay there, and how to teach others. But suddenly, she was there. A great wonder had appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet. It was years before she could write, quote, "The spiritual idea is clad with the radiance of spiritual truth, and matter is put under her feet. The moon is under her feet. This idea reveals the universe as secondary and tributary to spirit," end quote. But when she reached this understanding, she could also look back and see the sign of the Son of Man in heaven that Jesus had prophesied. There is far more meaning to the Aurora Polaris than people of this 20th century have ever dreamed. Admiral Richard E. Byrd did a great deal of exploring in the polar regions, and his statement of November 1955, before embarking upon his last trip to the Antarctic, is significant. Quote, "This is the most important expedition in the history of the world." End quote. When Christian scientists learn how to use the key to the scriptures that our leader has put into our hands, they will make marvelous discoveries and unlock mysteries that geographical explorers have only touched upon. When they begin to understand the Aurora Polaris, they will have learned much about origin. The spiritual is always the original. George Kennan, who witnessed and recorded the Aurora Borealis of February 1866, had no understanding of its import. But he sensed it when he wrote that the signs in the heavens were grand enough to herald the destruction of a world. On the 26th of February, there occurred one of the grandest displays of the Arctic aurora, which had been observed there for more than 50 years, and which exhibited such unusual and extraordinary brilliancy that even the natives were astonished. Late in the evening, there burst suddenly upon our startled eyes the grandest exhibition of vivid, dazzling light and color of which the mind can conceive. The whole universe seemed to be on fire. A broad arch of brilliant prismatic colors spanned the heavens from east to west like a gigantic rainbow with a long fringe of crimson and yellow streamers stretching up from its convex edge to the very zenith. At short intervals of 1 or 2 seconds, wide luminous bands parallel with the arch rose suddenly out of the northern horizon and swept with a swift, steady majesty across the whole heavens, like long breakers of phosphorescent light rolling in from some limitless ocean of space. Every portion of the vast arch was momentarily wavering, trembling and changing color, and the brilliant streamers which fringed its edge swept back and forth in great curves, like the fiery sword of the angel at the gate of Eden. In a moment, the vast auroral rainbow, with all its wavering streamers, began to move slowly up toward the zenith, and a second arch of equal brilliancy formed directly under it, shooting up another long serried row of slender colored lances toward the North Star, like a battalion of the celestial host presenting arms to its commanding angel. Every instant the display increased in unearthly grandeur. The luminous bands revolved swiftly, like the spokes of a great wheel of light across the heavens. The streamers hurried back and forth with swift, tremulous motion from the ends of the arches to the center. And now and then a great wave of crimson would surge up from the north and fairly deluge the whole sky with color, tinging the white, snowy earth far and wide with its rosy reflection. But as the words of the prophecy, quote, "and the heavens shall be turned to blood," end quote, formed themselves upon my lips, the crimson suddenly vanished, and a lightning flash of vivid orange startled us with its wide, all-pervading glare, which extended even to the southern horizon, as if the whole volume of the atmosphere had suddenly taken fire. I even held my breath a moment as I listened for the tremendous crash of thunder, which it seemed to me must follow this sudden burst of vivid light. But in heaven or earth, there was not a sound to break the calm silence of night, save the hastily muttered prayers of the frightened native at my side, as he crossed himself and kneeled down before the visible majesty of God. I could not imagine any possible addition which even almighty power could make to the grandeur of the aurora as it now appeared. The rapid alternations of crimson, blue, green, and yellow in the sky were reflected so vividly from the white surface of the snow that the whole world seemed now steeped in blood. And then, quivering in an atmosphere of pale, ghastly green, through which shone the unspeakable glories of the mighty crimson and yellow arches. But the end was not yet. As we watched with upturned faces the swift ebb and flow of these great celestial tides of colored light, the last seal of the glorious revelation was suddenly broken, and both arches were simultaneously shivered into a thousand parallel perpendicular bars, every one of which displayed in regular order from top to bottom the seven primary colors of the solar spectrum. From horizon to horizon, there now stretched two vast curving bridges of colored bars, across which we almost expected to see passing and repassing the bright inhabitants of another world. Amid cries of astonishment and exclamations of "God have mercy," from the startled natives, these innumerable bars began to move with a swift dancing motion back and forth along the whole extent of both arches, passing each other from side to side with such bewildering rapidity that the eye was lost in the attempt to follow them. The whole concave of heaven seemed transformed into one great revolving kaleidoscope of shattered rainbows. Never had I even dreamed of such an aurora as this, and I am not ashamed to confess that its magnificence at that moment overawed and frightened me. The whole sky, from zenith to horizon, was one molten, mantling sea of color and fire, crimson and purple, and scarlet and green, and colors for which there are no words in language and no ideas in the mind, things which can only be conceived while they are visible. The signs and portents in the heavens were grand enough to herald the destruction of a world. Flashes of rich quivering color covering half the sky for an instant, and then vanishing like summer lightning. Brilliant green streamers shooting swiftly but silently up across the zenith. Thousands of variegated bars sweeping past each other in two magnificent arches, and great luminous waves rolling in from the interplanetary spaces and breaking in long lines of radiant glory upon the shallow atmosphere of a darkened world. With the separation of the two arches into component bars, it reached its utmost magnificence, and from that time its supernatural beauty slowly but steadily faded. The first arch broke up, and soon after it, the second. The flashes of color appeared less and less frequently. The luminous bands ceased to revolve across the zenith, and in an hour, nothing remained in the dark, starry heavens to remind us of the aurora, except a few faint Magellan clouds of luminous vapor. The Arctic aurora of February 26th is not the only sign that appeared in the heavens in 1866 to herald the end of the world, i.e., the end of the world of matter and the beginning of the understanding that man is not material, he is spiritual. The fact that the moon, matter, was under the feet of the woman of the apocalypse was signified in a manner that had never before occurred in the history of the world. February 1866 had no full moon. This remarkable feat of nature had never happened before.